Contributing to the climate crisis by pushing a multi-billion-dollar fraudulent marketing scheme that downplayed the catastrophic impacts of fossil fuels. Your thoughts, Bianca?
Well, in Puerto Rico, we're seeing the consequences of climate change firsthand. Those hurricanes have devastated Puerto Rico. People are still recovering. You know, 5 years later, we see a hurricane like Fiona. So we're seeing sea level rise swallow beaches in Puerto Rico. So I think it makes sense that the Puerto Rican people and municipalities are taking these companies to account when it comes to the consequences that they're living every day.
Bianca Grollo, we want to thank you for being with us, Puerto Rican independent reporter. Her short documentary, Aquí Vive Gente, or People Live Here, was featured in the Bad Bunny music video titled El Apagón. Her most recent documentary is titled País de Apagones, or Country of Blackouts. We will link to both of these. Oh, and we'll be streaming this year's Right Livelihood Award ceremony today on our website at 1:30 p.m. Eastern. Go to democracynow.org. And a huge fond farewell to Zina Precht-Rodriguez and Danielle Wu, our digital fellows, as they wrap up their time with us. Today, their last day at Democracy Now!, but you will never have a last day with us as you remain in our DNA, Democracy Now! Alum. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland time for your 5 o'clock news.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this end-of-year membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News, Portland City Council votes to spend $27 million on a controversial homelessness plan.
Portland police must destroy their stock of flashbang grenades thanks to a new federal ruling.
And the U.S. Senate passes the Respect for Marriage Act, ending stronger protections for same-sex and interracial marriages.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, November 30th, 2022. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Ashley Mackey.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. The Portland City Council has voted to spend $27 million on a controversial plan to criminalize street camping and build mass encampments to hold unhoused Portlanders. Today's vote was 3-0, with Commissioners Ryan and Maps voting yes, along with Mayor Ted Wheeler. Commissioners Rubio and Hardesty were absent. $17 million of those dollars will be spent on opening three mass outdoor encampments to hold 250 people. It also would fund salaries for 50 new homeless outreach jobs. A much smaller amount of the money is devoted towards addressing the severe lack of housing in Portland. $150,000 will be spent to identify city-owned properties that could be redeveloped into housing. Commissioners Maps and Ryan, as well as Mayor Wheeler, gave remarks at the council meeting this morning. Here's some of what they had to say.
I do not claim that the investments we make today will end Portland's homeless crisis. However, I do hope that with the investments we make today, we can mark the beginning of the end of Portland's homelessness crisis. Colleagues, for these reasons and more, I vote aye.
We have heard in these chambers from a very loud, passionate section of Portlanders that are not supportive of these resolutions. To those who came to testify, I hear your concerns. All of our offices have received nearly 1,000 calls and emails in support of the action this council is taking. Let me be clear, these resolutions do not criminalize homelessness. What is criminal is for government to continue to accept the status quo that has really accelerated over the last 5 years. My inspiration, do not accept the industry's status quo plan to wait until we have enough housing. We must act now. I vote aye.
I hear and I acknowledge the concerns and the upset that many Portlanders are expressing over the creation of these sanctioned sites. I've also heard and seen the hundreds of messages to my office that have supported this work. This is not a perfect solution, but it is a solution responsive to the reality that we face. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted.
Those were excerpts of remarks from this morning's Portland City Council meeting, where Commissioners Mapps, Ryan, and Mayor Wheeler voted in favor of spending $27 million on a plan to build mass encampments and ban street camping.
The plan to criminalize street camping and force unhoused Portlanders to live in mass open-air shelters was proposed by Wheeler and Ryan in late October, with a bill attached and no clear funding source. As a part of passing the funding, the city also voted to withhold $8 million that would normally be contributed to the Joint Office of Homeless Services. That office is a city and county partnership to address the homelessness crisis. The county says losing that $8 million could mean shuttering two homeless shelters in the next year. If the cut is permanent, it could mean a loss of 249 shelter beds and rental assistance to nearly 1,500 residents. The city indicated they would withhold their $7 million more dollars if the joint office would not support their controversial plan with more money. Commissioners heard extensive testimony criticizing the plan from homeless Portlanders and concerned citizens both. In support are business owners, tourism lobbyists, and real estate firms. The total price tag of the plan in its entirety would reach $10 billion over the next 10 years. The city has yet to secure additional funding from other agencies.
In other city news, Portland has agreed not to use flashbang and rubber ball distraction devices for crowd control and will dispose of its remaining inventory. That change is thanks to a federal lawsuit from Don't Shoot Portland, a lawsuit that the organization won. The city will also pay $250,000 to settle with Don't Shoot Portland in the lawsuit, which challenged the force used by Portland police against protesters in 2020. The $250,000 payout will be split between five named plaintiffs: Nicholas J. Roberts, Michelle Misha Belden, Alexandria Johnson, Lester Rexy, and Thomas Dreyer, with $1 set aside for Don't Shoot Portland. Police also must abide by a 14-month injunction requiring them to follow Bureau policy and state law restricting their use of tear gas, less lethal munitions, pepper spray, and long-range acoustic devices for crowd control. The settlement comes more than 2 years after Don't Shoot Portland filed the suit, as nightly protests spurred by the police murder of George Floyd were happening in the city. Teresa Rayford is the founder and executive director of Don't Shoot Portland. Rayford said, quote, "This is a win for organizers and anti-fascist activists everywhere. Our freedom of expression is the foundation of how we make social change possible." End of quote.
The Senate just passed legislation protecting same-sex marriages. The bill ensures that same-sex and interracial marriages are established in federal law. The legislation would not force any state to allow same-sex couples to marry, but it would require states to recognize all marriages that were legal where they were performed. In a landmark 2015 Obergefell civil rights case, the United States Supreme Court ruled that the fundamental right to marry is guaranteed to same-sex couples by both the Due Process Clause and the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. The ruling required all 50 states, the District of Columbia, and territories like Puerto Rico to perform and recognize the marriages of same-sex couples on the same terms and conditions as the marriages of opposite-sex couples. The legislation passed by the Senate would protect current same-sex unions even if the court's 2015 decision was overturned. The new bill was approved 61-36 yesterday, including support from 12 Republicans. It now moves to the House for a final vote, most likely next week. Democrats wanted to move quickly, while their party still holds the majority in both chambers of Congress. President Joe Biden said he will sign the bill, quote, "promptly and proudly." He said it will ensure that LGBTQ youth, quote, "will grow up knowing that they too can lead full, happy lives and build families of their own," end quote.
That move by Congress is seen as a critical one after the June Supreme Court decision that overturned the federal right to an abortion. That particular ruling, including a concurring opinion from Justice Clarence Thomas, suggesting that same-sex marriage was open for a similar challenge. The new legislation comes as the LGBTQ plus community has faced a number of violent attacks, such as the shooting last weekend at a gay nightclub in Colorado Springs that killed 5 people and injured at least 17. Kelly Robinson, the incoming president of Human Rights Campaign, said, quote, "Our community really needs a win. We have been through a lot. As a queer person who is married, I feel a sense of relief right now. I know my family is safe," end quote. The vote perhaps was personal for many senators as well. Tammy Baldwin, a Democrat from Wisconsin, is the first openly gay senator. Baldwin was the lead sponsor of the bill. 2/3 of Americans, by the way, support same-sex marriage. Nonetheless, many were surprised the bill received bipartisan support. Some conservative groups lobbied hard for Republican supporters to switch their votes. Democrats needed 10 GOP votes to overcome a filibuster in the 50-50 Senate, so they waited until after the midterm elections, hoping that would relieve political pressure on Republicans. Eventual support from 12 Republicans gave Democrats the votes they needed.
The federal bill to bolster same-sex marriage got the thumbs up from the U.S. Senate on Tuesday. Now it heads back to the House for final approval. Suzanne Potter has more on the reaction from LGBTQ advocacy groups in Nevada.
Its passage of the Respect for Marriage Act is a huge step forward for people who identify as LGBTQ+. The bill would require states to recognize all marriages performed in other states. However, it does not require any state to conduct same-sex marriages. Chris Davin with the Henderson Equality Center says no state should be allowed to disregard legal same-sex unions.
It should not be up to somebody else who somebody can marry because of their beliefs, their religion, their ideology. When do we finally say enough of enough on who can dictate what we can and cannot do as living beings?
The Senate added language to the bill, clarifying that people who run wedding-related businesses and have religious or moral objections don't have to participate in same-sex unions. The bill now goes back to the House for a second vote, where it is expected to pass and then be signed by President Joe Biden. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said the vote shows that, in his own words, the long but inexorable march towards greater equality advances forward.
A decade ago, it would have strained all of our imaginations to envision both sides talking about protecting the rights of same-sex married couples. No matter who you are or who you love, you too deserve dignity and equal treatment under the law. That's about as American ideal as it comes.
Opponents argued the bill could penalize states that have not legalized same-sex unions. The push for federal protections for same-sex marriage heated up after the Supreme Court reversed Roe v. Wade and took away the constitutional right to abortion. For Nevada News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
You're listening to an end-of-year membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Melanie Henshaw of Street Roots. She'll be talking about her new article concerning the Brackeen versus Holland Supreme Court case, which could overturn the Indian Child Welfare Act. At 6 p.m., it's Eco Justice Radio. Then at 7, Project Censored. Tonight's weather will be rainy with an overnight low of 38, wet again tomorrow with a daytime high of 40. Today in history, in 1999, demonstrations against a World Trade Organization meeting in Seattle by anti-globalization protesters catch police unprepared and force the cancellation of opening ceremonies. The quote of the day is from American politician and the first black woman elected to the U.S. Congress, Shirley Chisholm, who was born this day in 1924. Chisholm said, quote, "If they don't give you a seat at the table, bring a folding chair," end quote.
The House approved legislation to avert a nationwide rail strike by imposing a labor agreement between rail companies and their workers. The bill passed on a bipartisan 290 to 137 vote. The measure would force the rail companies and employees to abide by a tentative agreement that the Biden administration helped arrange earlier this year, which increased pay and set more flexible schedules for workers. After President Biden made a personal appeal for the bill, Congress acted quickly. Quick approval is expected from the Senate, and Biden's signature is already promised. The House also approved a separate measure to add 7 days of compensated sick time to the agreement, which passed with only 3 Republicans supporting. Several of the 12 rail unions involved have complained about the tentative agreement because of the low number of paid family and medical leave days. Representative Cori Bush, one of the lawmakers who lobbied for the second bill, adding more paid leave, said, "At the end of the day, we really believe that our work is to have the right to paid leave, and so we're going to stand with our workers and with our unions."
As we reported earlier, the U.S. Senate has passed the Respect for Marriage Act. For more on that and other political news, it's Catherine Carley with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
We are not pushing this legislation to make history. We are doing this to make a difference for millions upon millions of Americans. It's a historic day, but it's going to make a difference.
Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin celebrated the Senate's passage of the Respect for Marriage Act, which would ensure same-sex and interracial marriages are enshrined into federal law. The bill, which passed in a 61-36 vote, includes protections for religious liberties, such as exempting businesses from providing services to couples, and was supported by 12 Republicans, including Senator Cynthia Lummis of Wyoming.
For the sake of our nation today and its survival, we do well by taking this step.
The bill now returns to the House, where Democrats remain in control for the rest of the legislative session. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says Congress will take up legislation this week to prevent a threatened nationwide railroad strike.
We must avoid a strike. Jobs will be lost, even union jobs will be lost. Water will not be safe. Product will not be going to market. And we could lose 750,000 jobs, some of them union jobs. That must be avoided.
The move comes ahead of a December 9th strike deadline. 4 of 12 rail unions lack a contract, including one union which rejected a tentative deal negotiated with help from the Biden administration. Union leaders were angered by lawmakers' decision to force adoption of an agreement which does not address paid sick leave for workers. A federal jury found Oath Keepers founder Stuart Rhodes guilty of seditious conspiracy for plotting to prevent the peaceful transfer of power following the 2020 presidential election, leading to the January 6 attack on the Capitol. Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti joined 70 other mayors from across the U.S. in asking Congress to fast-track immigration protections for so-called Dreamers, or undocumented immigrants who came to the U.S. as minors.
So we say clearly to Washington, pass the DREAM Act once and for all right now.
The mayor's fear a possible Supreme Court decision could invalidate the DACA program, making hundreds of thousands of young adults subject to deportation. The mother of one of the victims in the Uvalde, Texas elementary school shooting has filed a federal lawsuit against gun manufacturer Daniel Defense for negligently using militaristic imagery to lure young people to purchase their guns. Finally, Twitter says it will no longer stop users from sharing false information regarding COVID-19. Company policies against misinformation on the virus led to more than 11,000 account suspensions prior to the purchase of Twitter by Elon Musk. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
As Congress enters negotiations before the end of the year, a group led by U.S. Representative Pramila Jayapal of Washington says Congress shouldn't pass corporate tax breaks unless it also expands the child tax credit for families. Eric Tegedoff has more.
A group of U.S. House members says Congress shouldn't pass corporate tax breaks unless it also expands tax credits for families. Representative Pramila Jayapal of Washington penned a letter, signed by 57 other Democratic House members, to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, opposing tax cuts for businesses if an expansion of the child tax credit and earned income tax credit isn't also included. An expanded child tax credit during the pandemic expired last year, after helping pull millions of families out of poverty. April Messenger is with the Washington State Association of Head Start and ECAP.
When you think about the big businesses getting tax breaks, where's the relief for the families who are struggling day to day to put food on their tables? We have to think about everybody on both ends of the spectrum.
When it was in effect, the expanded child tax credit provided monthly payments of $250 to $300 per child to families, depending on the child's age. Without the expanded program, an estimated 324,000 kids in Washington state are missing out on the full child tax credit. Opponents in Congress say the program contributed to inflation. Inflation is now one major factor squeezing families. But Messenger, who works with low-income families, says an expanded tax credit would help with this issue. She points out that families use the money not for frivolous things, but to pay off debt and for basic needs. In some cases, she adds, it meant families not having to choose between rent and child care.
Just that little bit of knowing that there was some hope at the end of the month or coming in the mailbox really gave people inspiration to do things like plan ahead and make some financial decisions to help get themselves out of poverty.
The expanded child tax credit has become a priority for some Democrats as Congress enters its end-of-year negotiations and before Republicans take control of the House in 2023. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Interior Secretary Deb Haaland kicks off the White House Tribal Nations Summit this week. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Secretary of the Interior Deb Haaland says in the last 2 years, the Biden-Harris administration has committed to working with tribes and has made many investments in Indian country. Haaland delivered opening remarks at the White House Tribal Nations Summit Wednesday morning, which is being held in person in Washington, D.C. She told tribal leaders the Interior Department alone has invested more than $45 billion in Indian country through the American Rescue Plan, the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, and the Inflation Reduction Act. Haaland talked about a land transfer for Montana tribes and announced a new oral history project slated for 2023 for Indian boarding school survivors.
This has never been undertaken by the United States government and is a resource that I know many of you will have requested as part of your own work to document your own history. This project demonstrates the new era I spoke of. Over the next 2 days, you will hear even more about the work that is happening and the opportunities with your partnerships that lie ahead.
Haaland announced the creation of a new Office of Strategic Partnerships, which is working to build 9 new Bureau of Indian Education schoolyards across the country. She touched on tribal co-stewardship to address climate change and co-management of lands and waters. She says there's work being done on broadband, including an agreement to help bring electromagnetic spectrum access to tribal lands. Haaland says she'll be meeting with tribal leaders throughout the next 2 days to discuss issues impacting Indian country. Wednesday morning also included tribal leaders and administration officials taking part in a panel on education and native languages. Tribal leaders from the country's 574 federally recognized tribes were invited to take part in the two-day summit. During the White House Tribal Nations Summit, President Biden is expected to proclaim a Nevada sacred site off limits to development, with a formal designation of Aviquame as a national monument. Native groups have been advocating for its protection. The area is sacred to 12 tribes and is the center of creation stories, says Taylor Patterson with the Native Voters Alliance Nevada.
It's the place where all of their traditional stories and knowledge comes from. And then for our Southern Paiute tribes in the area, it's also a part of the Salt Song Trail. And so that tells really the life cycle of Paiute people and how they moved through the land and all the important places, plants, and animals in the area.
It's located between the Lake Mead National Recreation Area and the Nevada-California border, covering nearly 450,000 acres in southwestern Nevada. A federal judge has ordered Enbridge and the Bad River Tribe in Wisconsin to come up with a joint plan to avoid a spill from an oil and gas pipeline should erosion worsen on the tribe's reservation. Danielle Kading reports the ruling stems from the tribe's lawsuit that seeks to shut down the Canadian energy firm's pipeline on its reservation.
Enbridge's Line 5 pipeline will continue to operate, but U.S. District Judge William Conley said risk of a significant rupture exists where it crosses the Bad River. Conley said the negative effects in the Bad River watershed and Lake Superior could be catastrophic. The line carries up to 23 million gallons of oil per day from Superior across northern Wisconsin to Sarnia, Ontario. The federal judge ordered Enbridge and Bad River to meet by December 17th to discuss installation of emergency shutoff valves, a joint proposal for shutting down and purging the line, and projects that could slow further erosion. The two must submit their proposal by Christmas Eve. An Enbridge spokesperson says it looks forward to discussing the issues with Bad River. Bad River Tribal Chairman Mike Wiggins Jr. did not respond to requests for comment. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Bear's Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante are two iconic national monuments that have gotten their federal protections restored under the Biden administration. Two lawsuits want to undo those protections, and one of them also targets the Antiquities Act. But conservation groups say these lands hold cultural and natural resource significance. Alex Gonzalez has the details.
Conservation groups are pushing to keep federal protections for Bear's Ear and Grand Staircase Escalante National Monuments in Utah. Boundaries of the two monuments were significantly reduced by President Donald Trump 5 years ago, but were restored by the Biden administration. Now conservation groups have filed a motion to intervene in two lawsuits, one headed by the state of Utah and the other headed by a number of plaintiffs, including the Blue Ribbon Coalition, an off-road vehicle advocacy group that challenged federal protection of these lands. One suit targets the Antiquities Act, saying the monument areas are too large and essentially deprive the state of resources. Steve Block at the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance says groups like his are working alongside the Biden administration to ensure protection continues.
That's the really high level, is that it comes down to who gets to call the shots on these lands. And then I think there are some interests who want to see these landscapes exploited for short-term financial gain instead of long-term preservation.
Several tribal nations have also gotten involved. The Bear's Ears National Monument was established by President Barack Obama. Grand Staircase Escalante was declared a national monument by President Bill Clinton in 1996. It's said to be home to many dinosaur fossils that can't be found anywhere else in the world. It's only been a couple of months since the lawsuits were filed, so Block says they're in the preliminary stages. He adds the lawyers representing the state want the U.S. Supreme Court to hear their case, where the court's conservative majority could possibly undo the Antiquities Act.
It's a real black eye on the state that they would seek to undo the monuments, seek to open these areas again to the type of extractive uses like oil and gas, like coal, like hard rock mining, like off-road vehicle use.
Block says he's disappointed the state isn't embracing the opportunity to protect these areas and work with tribes to safeguard land that is so iconic to Utah. For Utah News Connection, I'm Alex Gonzalez.
Unusually warm Pacific Ocean waters contributed to a devastating storm in Alaska this past September. The remains of Typhoon Murbach wreaked havoc when warm waters enabled it to form much closer to Alaska than normal. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on that story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. This past September, the remains of Typhoon Murbach wreaked havoc on Alaska's west coast. The region is no stranger to big storms, but the waters in the northern Pacific were unusually warm this year, so Murbach formed much closer to Alaska than most typhoons do. Rick Toman is with the International Arctic Research Center at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He says by the time the storm slowed down over colder water, it was relatively close to shore, and damage from the wind was severe.
All that wind basically acts as a plow, pushing the water north. And so in many communities, we saw water levels at or near the highest of record.
If Murbach had hit later in the year, sea ice could have helped dampen the waves before they reached shore, and frozen ground would have helped prevent erosion. But the storm hit early.
So no sea ice, no frozen ground to even offer a modicum of protection against the wind and waves.
The storm caused massive erosion and flooding, and global warming makes it more likely it will happen again, bringing yet another threat to a place that already has one of the harshest climates in the world. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael has too many questions.
Before Christmas, I'd like some answers. When millions of people aren't allowed to leave their homes for weeks or months, who brings more food, medicine? Who takes away trash? Is anyone counting the dead? Where are the protesters arrested in China going? Given an authoritarian government a surplus of people, what do you get? We all know someone who recently got COVID. We expect it to happen, but not too seriously. Maybe Big Pharma needed a year-round flu and not just flu season. Where have all the workers gone? A nearby jack-in-the-box had just enough staff to offer French fries. Just fries. Help wanted signs everywhere. Businesses suddenly closed for a day or two. Is this just a Portland problem? Will the Respect for Marriage Act, which passed the Senate with 12 Republicans along, get through the House before the Republicans take it over? Will the weather forecasters stop predicting snow that never happens, repeatedly disappointing school kids and others? For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to an end-of-year membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, November 30th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem and Dan Raphael. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Suzanne Potter, Catherine Carley, Antonia Gonzalez, Alex Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is the long-suffering but always pleasant Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Michelle Coppola.
And I'm Ashley Mackey. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year membership drive, so now is a great time to get involved. If you would like to become a member and support our